On this episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald, Mr. Fourverse, joins me to recap week 8 of the NFL. It was an interesting day. We had the Jets getting their first win. The Broncos stomped the Cowboys. The Texans offense shows a little blip of life, a little beep of life. That was fun to see from CJ Stroud and that crew. Myles Garrett gets 5 sacks. Browns still lose. And plenty of more in highs and lows. Very fun show, even if the day of games featured a lot of blowouts. Week 8. Recap. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome to Football 301. Nate Tice here with Charles McDonald. We're coming to you right after Sunday Night Football. It's time for the late hit. Yes, Sunday Night Football has just wrapped up. The Packers beat the Steelers 35-25 at the stadium formerly known as Heinz Field. I refuse to acknowledge any other name. Charles, great to see you again. How you doing? What's going on?
Oh man, I was happy for like the first half, you know, because it felt like we finally had a good close game that was gonna go back and forth for a little bit. The Steelers are running the ball well. It felt like maybe they had found a little avenue for success against the Packers. And then the second half happened. Jordan Love, at some point during halftime, Jordan Love went to the settings and turned into rookie and absolutely shredded the Packers or the Steelers defense. Like, that was cool to see, you know, because today it's easy to point out, like, there was one game that ended within one possession this entire week so far, even going back to Thursday night to the Vikings Chargers. Every other game was a blowout. And I'm not talking like, you know, 14 points. We're talking like 30, 20 point blowouts all over the place. But still to see like Jordan Love be able to execute that level and the passing game execute that level, and you got some Tucker Kraft big plays. I think it just showed you the potential of this Packers team, even if they've been a little up and down this season. Like, this is still a really good team, and if they hit their stride and kind of play up to their potential, they can still go on a run and win the Super Bowl. And for the Steelers, like that second half, it kind of felt like more of the same for what the past few years have been.
The magic ran out. When two Packers missed two field goals, with Mass missed two field goals, I was like, Mike Tomlin's about to do it again. Here we go, strap it. And then the second half happened, and Jordan Love absolutely shredded the Steelers in the second half, like other teams have done, other passing games have done this year. In the second half, Jordan Love finished 16 of 19, 214 yards, 11.3 yards per attempt, 148.7 passer rating. Completed 20 straight passes at one point tonight. And I would say number 20 was particularly exquisite, if I might, might use that word. It was to Dobbs against a blitz where the guy came down. He just booped it right over. And it was brilliant. It was a brilliant throw that the commentators didn't even comment about. And I was just like, oh my God, that was insane. But no, it was what you're kind of getting at is that the Packers, who were, you know, a team I'm very, very high on going into this year, like, it's been frustrating at times. Like, the Browns game was probably the peak frustrating. Even the Cardinals game last week felt frustrating. But it's one of these teams, upon review, I'm always like, oh, they're so close to popping. They're so close. Like, stuff is looking good. The O-line's getting sorted out. But then you see, like, this is what I'm kind of was envisioning with this Packers team. The highs that Jordan Love can achieve. Like, that's why they are as good of contenders, I think, as anybody in the NFL. I really do think that. Because they have a closer, Micah Parsons, on defense. They run good zone coverage. And then they got this guy, Jordan Love, who can spin it with anybody right now, especially when he's feeling it like he did tonight. I thought a couple throws I wanted to highlight. The Christian Watson was back. He had the little 3rd-and-7 completion to Christian Watson in the second half against the blitz. And that's where Love is so cool, because against the blitz, he does the gash or B-gash, which is how I think you beat the blitz. And Love is like, you don't have to twist my arm. Like, he's like, he had the initial read for him was open. And he's like, I'm going for the deep post and I'm going to buy time to get to it. And it's just so cool that he's able to get to these high end throws and has the confidence to try and do it. This offense can be a little frustrating, especially on second down sometimes. But man, they got a good floor. And it's just Love, just especially when these receivers get going, it just lifts up the ceiling to like, oh yeah, that's a contender. And then shout out to Tucker Kraft, the Warlord. Flat route TD on just like a little flat RPO, choice route TD. They're dialing up choice routes to him now. Next Gen Stats tweeted this: 131 yards of yak for Tucker Kraft tonight. It's the most in a tight by a tight end since 2018 in a game, and the third most ever by a tight end since Next Gen Stats this database goes back, which is 2016. So, whew, the highs of this Packers offense certainly were high, and you felt it tonight.
Yeah, and I think like the Steelers defense, man, you guys gotta get a quick. As the next high, thank God that was as low for the Steelers defense because funny you were talking about the first and second or the second down how they struggled sometimes because I was looking at it from the Steelers perspective just for this game. On first and second down tonight, Jordan Love was 24 for 26, 223 yards, two touchdowns. 92% completion rate, 40% of his dropbacks went for first down, 65% success rate, 20% explosive pass rate. Like, what are you guys doing? Like, what happened here? I honestly think, like, going back to – that's absurd. Like,
I know. Every number you listed was more absurd than the last. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. What are you doing? And the funny thing is, it's 2.3 seconds to throw. So, like, you're just getting peppered over and over and over and over again. Man, that was just so bad. And I'm surprised that I'm surprised that their defense is this bad. But man, like they can't really do anything, it seems like. I think this could probably be the reason why they might miss the playoffs if it gets down to that, if it gets down to it.
I know. I actually feel okay about where their offense is. Like it's not perfect, but it's kind of what we talked about this even on the preview show. It's kind of what we envisioned. It was like the run game's solid enough. They got some decent linemen. And then, they only have one receiver, essentially, in DK Metcalf. But like Rodgers can still spin it when he's not pressured. So it's like they can hang in games. It's just that, I mean, this defense, it's predictable. There's wide open guys. Whenever they run zone, there's guys wide open. I was curious if they were able to get, you know, they actually held up okay statistically against play action, but my theory of it was like, well, I watched these linebackers and safeties. I'm like, you can get after them. And sure enough, that's what happened tonight. See guys just getting shredded over the middle. I'm with you. It's like, you would think that the Steelers offense would be the one hindering them. And I was like, I actually thought they were okay overall, you know, that just like they've been all season. So I'm right there with you. I think this defense is just blah. Did you have any thoughts on the Packers defense? Anything they showed tonight? Kayshon Nixon had a rough one, but like, you know, they have some good players on top of Parsons, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they did a great job in the second half, kind of, making life more comfortable for Rodgers. Because it seemed like in the first half, maybe the Steelers were just kind of be able to just play the ideal Arthur Smith game for what he wants to do, where they're just going to be able to run the ball. And then things got a little out of hand for them on the other side of the ball, so they had to start throwing to keep up. And it was just kind of blech, I think, by the end of the day for the Steelers offense. And you probably have a little bit of concern maybe if moving forward they find themselves more in negative game scripts because his defense is pretty bad. Like, is this offense built to actually come and play from behind? I think they still
have some. I'll answer your question. I don't think they are, Charles.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I'm going to say, I think they still got some work to do there.
I love your rhetorical. I appreciate it.
What I want to say is, as much as I like Arthur Smith, and I think he's a really good offensive coordinator, I said last week, if you can go to this many different stops, different types of quarterbacks, different teams, schemes, you know, players, have three top 10 offenses is pretty good. But it is kind of a front runner's offense, you know, like things need to be going well for this offense to be at its best. And it's not just him. Like, we've seen that at times with Shanahan too, like in the playoffs when he has struggled, organizing or orchestrating a comeback at times. It's at its best when they're ahead. So when they come from behind, Still trying to figure that out. Like in the second half, they had negative EPA. The success rate was under 40%. Aaron was sacked twice. Like it really, really wasn't the same. And they weren't really getting much out of these dropbacks at all. So that's something to pin for them moving forward, especially because the defense is definitely awful. Like very, very bad.
They have just no margin for error. It's that if they get a penalty on offense, it's like, boop, drive done. Because Rodgers' game right now is not too, you know, he had a couple, but it's like it's a dink and dunk. And when you only have DK Metcalf and you have interesting tight ends, but not like Tucker Kraft, you know, you have John right. Smith, who's fine, you know, and Darnell Washington, who has his role, and Freiermuth is whatever. And then, like, Jalen Warren, I like, you know, great workout montage, by the way. But like that, you know, he's fine. He's fine, but it's not like they're designing these shot plays to him. It's more like just underneath checkdowns and hopefully you break a tackle. And when you go against a defense like the Packers, we talked about this on the preview show, one of the best tackling teams in the NFL, and they play a lot of zone. So you know what zone can do? It can take away your number one and make you work with all your auxiliary receivers. Their auxiliary receivers aren't that great. So it's almost a personnel thing. If they trade for somebody, I'll be a little bit more interested, which they seem to be in every single rumor right now. But yeah, I feel like this is what the offense is. It's about average-ish. That's why I keep coming back to. And like you said, negative game scripts, they're not a game script proof offense or defense, really. So yeah, it's just it's a high wire act they're trying to run. But I mean, rewatching the Packers Cardinals game, even though it was a tight result and they, you know, going to get Jacoby Brissett and all this, rewatching, I was like, oh man, like I feel a lot better about you guys than maybe I did watching live. And then just one of those, again, they do a lot of good stuff. They're very sound. Now you get Watson back. You got Golden. Romeo Doubs is becoming just a good player too. Much more reliable. Yeah. And then you got Tucker Kraft. And then you got a run game that's solid. You know, it's not the sexiest run game, but it's, I don't know, it's all kind of coming together. Savion Williams is getting little gadget plays. Shout out to Bill Barnwell, by the way. We did a show last week and he mentioned Savion Williams. I was like the first person I've heard talk about him in about 8 months since he got drafted by TCU, you know? So, no, but it's, I just feel real good about this Packers team. I just really do. It's the formula makes sense in my head. And I think they just kind of keep rolling. And I think Love, who was my preseason MVP pick, it's like he's feeling like that now, where it's like he is moving that needle to a great extent. The highlight plays, but just the consistency as well. How he's reading the game out. He's just such a fun player to watch. It's just, I really enjoy watching him in this Packers offense and really just Packers team right now. Any closing thoughts? Well,
as I say, it's nice. It's fun to watch the offense operate when the other team can't rush the passer, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy watching.
Rats on air is pretty fun, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know. It's jarring to watch a Steelers front seven that's this toothless, you know. Yeah. I'm looking at some of the pressure numbers that PFF charted. It looked at the highest pressure rate tonight was Derek Harmon, who had two pressures on 15 rushes, and TJ Watt had a little over 10%, and then just a lot of 4%, 2%. I mean, they need to like do some soul searching or just a major shakeup on that side of the ball, because they should never be this bad. It's like against their DNA, you know. It ain't right.
It feels static. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. I'm trying to find like words to describe it, because it's just like they've been doing it for years, and it's very predictable but they'll do some invert stuff, but it's not like an overly like I watch it and go, man, how do you? It's not Dick LeBeau, you know, where I'm watching it going like, oh my God, how do you block that blitz? Like, wow, that's funky. Like, you know, there's some defenses and like might not have the best personnel, but at least there's times on third. I watch the Falcons. They're not a great defense. And we're kind of seeing now that what it actually is, you know, we talk about that spoilers later, but at least on third down, I'm watching some of their blitzes and creepers. And I'm like, whew, you know, that's some exotic stuff coming at you. Like that's pretty good for Mel Olbrich. But yeah, I watch the Steelers. I'm like, all right, zone blitz. All right, field pressure, pretty easy to kind of sort out. And if you don't have the dudes making plays for you, it just looks like this when you go against an offense that can torch you and has no fear in you. So yeah, great shout out about what their pressures is. And that's the thing with TJ Watt. By the way, none of the Wisconsin guys said they were from Wisconsin in the player intros. Totally get it. Is when he's only lining up on the right offense's right side, it helps the offensive gameplay. Like, because I know where you are every single snap. Watch what the Browns do with Myles Garrett. He's a D tackle sometimes. He flips sides sometimes. They always find the fish. And I think TJ Watt's alignment is kind of like the canary in the coal mine for this. And that, hey, I'm only in this spot because this is what we've always done. You know, I'm not saying TJ does this or anything. It's just I'm watching the Steelers defense. It's like, well, move him around. Change it up a little bit, because now I know wherever I have to give my chip help to. Now I know where I can run away from. It just becomes predictable. And when you go against good game planners like LaFleur and good quarterbacks like Jordan Love, MVP candidates like Jordan Love, that's what it looks like. I think a pull ass kicking. So Packers win. Steelers do not. Look at their schedules real quick before we go move
on. Lamar Jackson's coming back soon.
He is. I know. Remember talking in the preview show, and it was like their chances, like one of the odds was like 24% still to win the division, even though the Ravens, I mean.
Yeah.
It was like,
they were like,
can you imagine that? That they can barely play football for a month and a half. Lamar Jackson's out, and it's still like basically a coin flip now after they won.
Yep. It's crazy.
AFC North. All right, Packers have Panthers, then the Eagles, then the Giants, then the Vikings, Lions, Bears. Oh, my. Kind of a, all right, that's very manageable schedule, interesting schedule. Steelers got Colts next week. There's got that Colts offense that's basically averaging 40 points a game going against the Steelers defense. Then they got the Chargers, Bengals, Bears, Bills, Ravens. So that's to come up in November. Interesting game. Congrats to the Packers. Congrats to Jordan Love. Charles and I got together earlier today. We went on YouTube to react to week 8 on an interesting day of Sunday football in the NFL. It was something, but it was a fun conversation, as always, with Charles. We had 3 highs, 3 lows, a little extra credit at the end, that Colts offense, Jonathan Taylor, very fun show with Chuck. And we did that coming up right after the break. Hello and welcome to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. We are live reacting to week 8, joined, as always, for these reaction shows and recap shows of whatever that slate of Sunday football was. My guy, Charles McDonald, Mr. Forverts. How are you doing today, Chuck? I should say Charles MacGyver, because of your mic situation got going on over there that you put together.
That's right. I tapped into my old country ancestry down there in Mississippi and built a mic stand from 3 broken mic stands that I had laying around, because the last one I had like just fell apart maybe like 2 seconds before we were about to hit record last week. So we put that together, and quite honestly, it was the most accomplished thing that might have happened in the 4 p.m. slate today, because I was like, man, like I feel like I can put this together and not miss like too much if I have it on the background in the I still feel that way. Still feel that way now that we're sitting here at the end of those games. But today's slate, that was one of those days where I'm looking at the PS5. I'm like, don't do it, Charles. Don't do it. You know you want to, but you got to stay strong. But thankful for at least one close game today. That was fun.
You're much like, Tony Stark had a lot of time to put together the Iron Man suit in the cave. That was this Sunday, was the cave that Tony Stark got stuck in. That's what this Sunday slate of football games was. But yeah, week 8 was something. Well, let's get into it. We're going to get into the ups and downs of week 8 with 3 highs, 3 lows. I think this is the perfect game and the perfect result to kind of sum up what this day was and what this morning slate was. Because even games that we thought were interesting turned out to be very not interesting. That's what we tried to get into our triple slop watch on Thursday. This is the Jets getting their first win of the season in a 39-38 barn burner against the Bengals, the Joe Flacco-led Bengals, who did not get slowed down throughout the entire day, but still lose to the Jets. Justin Fields puts on a pretty good game from Justin Fields with a couple really nice throws that we'll get into. Breece Hall had a big day, 133 rushing yards on just 18 carries, had a couple of touchdowns, including a great touchdown at the end of the game. Charles, Aaron Glenn gets his first win after. Can Woody Finally. Johnson do anything right? He can't even call out his team in the correct way. They immediately blow up in his face and put on almost a 40 burger against the Bengals. But how are you feeling about the Jets and Glenn's first win?
Yeah, it's not like Madden, like where you press something in the press box option and you get like -6. And it's like, -6 morale this week. Let's just reload the save. No. You gotta deal with that. And now Woody has to deal with Justin Fields having that performance after the comments that he made about him last week, where he basically said it'd be hard to win. It would be hard for any head coach to win with the quarterback who was playing like the way Justin Fields was, which wasn't wrong, but like, no. Why are you saying that out loud? Right. And thankfully we got on back video. To a point where, yeah, on video. But you know, sometimes this is a consequence of society, and we're just gonna have to keep it moving. I was a little worried at the start of this game because, man, the first quarter was not good. And I was like, are we really at a point like where this Jets offense has fallen so far where they can't even beat up on the Bengals defense, because the start of the year, they were moving the ball, and then they hit this rut the past 2 weeks where they've been, you know, one of the worst offenses I've ever seen, to be quite frank with you. And in the first quarter, it looked like more of the same, and then they kind of blew it out the water to close out that game and score 39 points and get that first win of the season. So just to get back to a baseline where, okay, you can score in the bad defenses, which was in question, I think, coming into this game. That was a good sign for the Jets. Justin Fields had probably his best game of the season. Jets defense, though, still got some work to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, both defense got plenty of work to do. This is what we kind of thought with the Jets, like the optimism about the Jets, especially on offense. And I agree with you, especially on early downs. They've been able to run the ball almost every week until this kind of little rut, like you said, especially in first and second down. They were able to get a lot of explosive runs throughout the season, which you saw again today. I mean, they put up 502 yards of total offense today, 53% success rate. 19 of their 31 design runs were successful. They finished with 254 total rushing yards, zero turnovers. There's only one sack in this game today, and it wasn't Justin Fields taking the sack. So no turnovers and only one sack, those types of rushing yards. That's a good day at the office on top of all the points and on top of the win. And the Bengals, though, like you said, the Jets defense has a lot of work to do. They had a 58% success rate on the day, 11 explosive plays. And it just felt like every time I looked up at this game, it was just like back and forth, someone scoring, some big play, some stupid happening. But I really say that Fields had some of his nicer throws. He's one of these guys that struggled throwing over the middle in his career. And today he had a couple of real nice ones. I had a play action from under center. That was a real nice one. I thought the slot corner touchdown on Tyler Johnson was a really good throw. He had pressure in his face. And those are the type of throws I've given Fields issues in his career, where pressure's in his face, he has to put touch on it because he's such a line drive thrower. Right. And it was a great throw. And I've always been kind of, I wouldn't say fond of, but have a soft spot for Tyler Johnson. I think he's an okay player, so it was kind of nice to see him get going. The 2-point play was an unreal effort from Fields. It put him down 6 or whatever it was, because they went for 2after they scored going down 14. Then Breece Hall had a passing touchdown with Mason Taylor dunking on a guy. It was just kind of like, I guess they needed some regression to good luck, or regression to good things happening because of what the season's done so far, because they've had so many stupid plays. So maybe they just all bounce back. But of course, I had to come against the Bengals, who are just like the stupid stuff magnet of a football team right now. Just nothing. Even after they felt good 10 days ago, they lose to the Jets in this type of manner. So it was, I mean, this is what I was hoping to watch out of this Jets team, but I'm just still, the defense is just, oh my God. It's just like, they're going to be in these types of games every week. I mean, that's what it's going to feel like. Yeah. But any other takeaways from this game? What are you feeling about the Bengals? Just kind of more of the same, like Flacco is fun for a little bit. He can do some things. At least their offense will be entertaining. That's kind of how I feel. Actually, both of these teams, how I feel about them. At least the offenses could be entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, the floor is high. The floor is high with, as long as you got like Jamar and you can throw the ball like that. I think if you're a Bengals fan, if you're a Bengals fan, you're probably a little worried at 0 sacks and not much pressure on Justin Fields. But outside of that, this is the same Bengals stuff, just a little better on offense.
I thought it was pretty funny with Chase finished with 19 targets, 91 yards. And 78 of those 91 yards were after the catch. So just spam Jamar Chase a lot and let him go to work. And that's kind of a good formula for anyone who's playing QB for the Bengals, even if they're just a morbid franchise, it feels like every week. But congrats to the Jets. Congrats to Aaron Glenn. Way to get that first one. Hopefully maybe you guys get a couple more. Actually, what is the Jets schedule before I go to the next one? Oh, they got the Browns next? Oh, no, they got a bye. Got to buy next. Then they go Browns, Patriots, Ravens, Falcons. So interesting couple slate of games.
Yeah.
All right. Now we are going to get to our next game. High number 2. And this is a game that just wrapped up before we started the show. That is the Broncos stomp the Cowboys to get to 6-2. Basically doubled the score of the Cowboys. We saw Joe Milton in there. That's all you need to know about the Cowboys day at the office. Broncos went 44-24. Kind of what we predicted in this game. Cowboys offense able to move the ball. Defense wasn't able to do anything at all. The Broncos offense just took them to the woodshed. They were able to do whatever they want. I mean, pick a stat. It was a big stat for the Broncos. Like 60% passing success rate, nearly 50% rushing success rate, whole bunch of explosives. Pat Bryant got going. Bo Nix had a couple nice throws, I thought, especially in the red zone. Run game was able to get going. Troy Franklin got going. But I thought the Pat Bryant stuff was interesting because they last week against the Giants, they were really trying to get him some scores in the red zone, but the play just kept getting blown up. So him getting the score was like, oh, they like him. There's something interesting about him, and I like Pat Bryant. But it was just whatever the Broncos wanted to do. Dak finished with two picks for the Cowboys. They kind of just kept stalling out, going against a real feisty Broncos defense, of course, one of the best in the game. What were some of your takeaways with this Broncos win, Chuck?
I think it just showed like how thin the margins are for where the Cowboys are this season. Because I thought there were moments where Dak played pretty well. I mean, this is a really tough defense to throw against, and he has some strong throws. But you throw two picks when your defense is this bad against a good offense. I mean, it felt like they had a chance, and then it got out of hand so fast. It felt like I blinked and they were down like 37-17, and it was over. So I think these teams are probably in two different tiers. I did think the Broncos would win this game. Didn't think it would be by 20 points, but again, that's just kind of the life you're living when your defense is this bad, and they just can't do anything right. They don't cover well. They don't defend the run well. It's just you're just really fighting for your life every week, and good teams are going to be able to exploit that, and that's what happened again this week.
I kind of felt like that was like, I mean, when we were previewing the show, I was like, I feel like Sean Payton's just licking his chops because it's just like a very predictable defense. Like even just the most basic kind of plays were just going for big gains, like the very spammy plays, like bubbles. We're going for first downs, you know, just like the cheapies were just going for good gains. And that's like, yeah. So if you're those, why do anything difficult? And then like Bo Nix didn't feel pressured at all. So he was able to just dial up and then hit whatever he wanted. The run game was able to pop off some plays. They finished with 10 explosive plays, a bunch of RJ Harvey stuff kind of going left outside. But really it was just, yeah, it was just this Cowboys team. It's just, like you said, you can't have any turnovers if your defense is going to play like that. And it just kind of feels like, oh, yeah, the Broncos are like, I think everybody's in lockstep with what the Broncos are. It's like, this is for sure a playoff team. It's just whether they can make a run and based on what the offense is. And this is encouraging that it's like, okay, going against, you know, pretty porous defense, you're able to kind of find your way, not making any stupid mistakes, actually able to put sustained drives, able to hit explosives, able to do something in the flow of the offense. But no, it was, I thought, just like a very encouraging day. 44 points is the most that the Broncos have scored since Sean Payton took over as the Broncos head coach a couple of years ago. So again, very, very encouraging performance. And I don't know, with the Cowboys, it was just kind of like, yeah, this is what their team is. It's like, unless the offense can win in a track meet, that's what they're going to play like. They go Cardinals, they got Raiders. They don't have like the hard schedule. Then they got Eagles, which will be a really interesting game. That'll be their second time playing each other. Chiefs, Lions, Vikings. So they got some really interesting games coming up. While the Broncos, they kind of, oh, Texans. Ooh, that's a fun one. Texans, Raiders, they got Chiefs as well. But they're right in it. I just feel like this team is just, yeah, this is a very good playoff team. It's just figuring out what the offense is, but they beat a bad unit. That's encouraging. That's what you want to say and what you want to see out of the team. So any other more takeaways from this game for you, Chuck?
Not really. I think, as it went
it's
on,
kind of expected, like, right? Go I don't way. Know. Didn't think it was going to be a total blowout, but I was like, all right, I feel like the Broncos should win this over the four quarters because their defense is so good and their offense is better than the Cowboys defense. Remember we talked about, I was like, of the four units, yeah, Cowboys defense is the worst unit by far. So it's pretty easy to pick the Broncos. We'll move on to high number three. And this is a different AFC game, AFC team showing a lot of life, an offense that's been lethargic at times. But I mean, especially last week going against Seattle, it was very lethargic. But the Texans offense showed some life. Texans win 26-15. It was not all perfect. Their run game still is garbage, but I thought the passing game really got going. Stroud finished with a 52% success rate, 318 yards, 30 of 39, and 88 QBR, 88.3 to be exact. Eight different Texans receivers or pass catchers had multiple receptions. Xavier Hutchinson finished with 69 yards and a touchdown. Jalen Noel got going, which was something me and Matt Harmon been screaming about for weeks. Jayden Higgins had a touchdown on a great design. Stroud had a couple scrambles for first downs. He had 16 passing first downs. I thought this was an encouraging performance from the Texans. I mean, 49ers defense without Fred Warner is not great. Without Nick Bosa is not great. And you kind of felt that today. Stroud went 18 and 19 for 270 yards and two touchdowns between the numbers. But what, any encouraging things, any other positive signs from this Texas offense for you, Chuck, what you saw today?
Well, they looked like an offense. That's a good start.
Right.
They looked like an NFL offense.
Yay!
The bar has fallen so low that I think you kind of forget sometimes there are good players on this offense. In a spot like this where, like, you really have to have this win if you want to keep your season alive. I thought CJ Stroud had his best game in a while, maybe, at least statistically, because I was starting to get concerned about him. Like, man, you're starting to take a lot of hits. You are starting to play hero ball. And I understand, like, how you get there, but you start to develop bad habits. And to see him just kind of have a really strong, good game today, I think was a good start. Would be a little concerned if I was a 49ers fan about how today went with their defense. But as the Ravens showed, you can have a terrible game against the Texans and still bounce back and keep your season alive. So I think moving forward for the Texans, this is a nice game to build on. But, you know, we're looking at a 49ers defense that's pretty banged up. But at least they were able to kind of get this one across the finish line when just a week ago, they played one of the worst games that I can remember on offense.
Yeah, it wasn't. There's no embarrassment where I was like, oh my God, what is this? Where there's actual drives and there's explosive plays and a pocket was formed for Stroud at times, which is just, I know it sounds like we're kidding, but if you watch this Texas offense, like they had moments against the Ravens a few weeks ago against a battered Ravens defense, but really every other week, it's just been so like frustrating. Their use of personnel has been frustrating. Nico Collins was out today too, which is like even more astounding that they're able to do this, but that's why I think it's been frustrating was because they weren't playing these young receivers and giving them shots. They're playing Braxton Berrios, who still was playing today. They're playing Christian Kirk over Jalen Noel. And I also thought, you know, I thought I wanted to see more three wide receiver sets for them. But what I thought was really interesting today was they used a lot of six offensive linemen, jumbo sets, 25 plays, which is, I think, the most the team has used this season. I was looking up in True Media. But they threw the ball six times out of those. They had four successful, but they averaged 20 yards per play. Or per pass, I'm sorry, when they were in jumbo sets today, which I thought was cool. And really jumbo around the league. There's been a bunch of jumbo. We'll talk about the Dolphins game later in a negative sense for the other team. Eagles are doing it a bunch. A lot of jumbo usage. That's it. It's like the run game still stunk. Like, don't get me wrong, for the Texans. But the fact that it was like, all right, at least Stroud doesn't look terrified. Not terrified, but look like he's like going to get crushed every play, or at least he's straining to even complete a pass that's down the field because he's either getting hit or just something as bad is happening. The run game still went 8 of 32 for how many were successful. The 49ers only had 8 runs this entire game, 8 designed runs, which is, I mean, got to be one of the lowest Shanahan's ever had. So also shout out to the Texas defense, but how are you feeling overall about the Texas team? Are you think that they can make a little run here? Well, I think the AFC is pretty wide open.
Sure, to get to the wild card. I mean, I think that's always kind of been on the table just because their defense is so good. But now you have just credibility that the offense can do something. So I think that was encouraging. It was probably pretty good for Nick Cayley for him to have this game because I know that the heat has been turned up for him, and that offense has been really underperforming. But as long as the defense is still good and you can just get enough like hero ball from CJ Stroud to kind of pull you across, I think they still have a chance to make the playoffs. Like you said, the AFC is wide open.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfect. Defense is going to keep them in every single game. The defense is amazing. This defense is top four, like locked in, and can rush the passer and play man coverage. It's just, and I thought the real nice positives of my last little, how I kind of sum it up, or just take one little takeaway, is that the Higgins touchdown, the Hutchinson touchdown were kind of cool designs on third down and a cool red zone design on both of them. And that's what's encouraging was like, all right, you guys aren't going to be the most sustainable offense, like even on your good days, but when you get your chances, make the most of them. So that's what it was like. All right, at least you guys can do this against a Fred Warner-less defense that really can't cover anything over the middle of the field. At least you're able to do it, which is way better than what they have shown in previous weeks. Playing the Broncos next week, which will be a much stiffer test, but I think that will be that's just going to be a fist fight. I'm sure we'll preview it, but that's just going to be a lot of punches in the nose. I think both offenses are going to take in that game. Speaking of punches in the nose, let's get to the lows. This is the low number one. This is, we have it as Panthers aren't ready for the big leagues yet. This could have been a high about the Bills run game, but really my low is Andy Dalton. What the hell is that? I'm like, holy crap, have you played football before? What was that? Like, but the Bills win a 40-burger, 40-9.
Which play are you talking about? Like,
oh, my God. Yeah, just in case so anyone many. Didn't see. I do want to compliment the Bills on their run game, but Andy Dalton had a fumble early after their driving, had the interception. Then he took a sack at the end of the half when they didn't have any timeouts, which is one of the most bizarre plays I've seen from a veteran quarterback that has dozens and dozens and dozens of NFL starts, started a bunch of games in college. Like, what? And you're supposed to be the vet-y savvy backup. Wow. What's your takeaways from this game, Chuck? Because I know you've been kind of like, haven't really gotten over the top with the Panthers. And I think this is just going to add fuel to your fire about like, yeah, you guys are a step behind, which I think some of those numbers were showing.
No, yeah. I mean, I can understand if you're a Panthers fan, probably being a little confused at what's going on here, because you're probably walking to that game saying, oh, we're 4-3. That's not so bad. You're probably record-wise, you're ahead of where you thought you would be, coming into the season, and certainly at the start of the season when it looked like it was really going to be a troubling year. But then you go, you beat the Falcons 30-0, which I think we found out pretty recently doesn't really mean all that much. Like, you're playing in tight games against the Dolphins and the Cowboys, which we found out today for the Cowboys and doesn't really mean all that much. And then the Bills, which are a real Super Bowl contender with an elite offense. They just come in and they look like a top team against a team that's still trying to figure out, you know, how many keepers they have moving forward just for their whole roster. So to me, it's kind of like, it's just another example of how, like, I guess finicky the NFL can be, where a lot of these games are just like coin flips, right? But when you get down to the end of it, there's still tiers that separate teams from each other, and the Bills in a different tier than the Panthers.
It's the hardest tier bump to make or tier jump to make from good solid team to actual contender. And I think I'm so hard on the Bills. And I mean, shoot, they still give up explosive runs, but they played better on defense today. Much more favorable game script. But then you watch their offense and you're like, that's the elite offense. That's the difference between good offense, solid offense, frisky offense, has moments offense, stretches offense, whatever you want to say, has flashes on offense, and a legit elite top five offense that has maybe a blemish against the Falcons, but then can just do this. And even with Josh Allen kind of like having being Josh Allen, still having a good solid game, but they finished with 245 yards on the ground on design runs, almost a 52% rushing success rate. They had gains of 64, 24, 21, 12, 12, 11, and 10. On the ground today. They were just, kind of getting anything, but really the Bills were doing a lot of toss plays. And it was just kind of one of those things where it's like, they can be physical and at you. And now they got the speed with James Cook and all just these movements, the movement runs. The second touchdown, the long touchdown, came on a toss zone play with the fullback. The Bills had a bunch of nice fullback plays. The first long touchdown was with the fullback on the field. What's his name? Reggie Gilliam, 41. They ran a counter play with him, and the Bills from under center were two running backs on the field today. So fullback looks, 13 plays, 136 yards, three touchdowns, 54% success rate. And that's what's so cool about this Bills offense is, well, Josh Allen is, of course, you know, a machine, a dragon, whatever you want to call him, the Terminator. But then that they can, with their run game, just do this, and they can be physical or they can just be speedy. And they can do it from different looks, and they get into all these personnel groupings, and they can do it with Jackson Hawes at tight end, you know, blocking his butt off. The pass protection for the Bills is kind of like the one thing I'm keeping my eye on. They've had some weird botches, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what's going on. I saw it a lot against the Falcons, but even just this week. And Allen's sack rate's a little high. It's highest since 2019. He's had his highest scramble rate since his rookie year. So it's something I'm just keeping my eye on. He didn't scramble today. But I did think that the Panthers had some moments where they actually got him protection-wise early on, but then they just were able to run him off the field. But this was the difference between like this type of offense, these elite offenses, and then with the Panthers with their moments. But I thought Dalton just didn't even give the Panthers a shot. And I know people are going to say, well, yeah, Bryce Young's better. As long as he doesn't turn the ball over like this and doesn't take a sack before the end of the half, yeah, it's going to be pretty easy to be a lot better than what the Panthers showed as a team today. But that's what the Panthers feel like. They're just, yeah, they've had some nice moments, but it's just kind of, you know, just a step behind. Any other closing thoughts on this game? Or want to get to load number two? I know you're excited to talk about that one.
I'm battling the VMix monster today, so I don't have any more on that game.
Just bob and weave with the lag. Yeah, no.
I'm like, is this a spectrum problem? And it's working as it should. I'm fine for my life. Just like
we'll get through it.
Gabriel was, every single drop back he's had in the NFL so far.
Oh, that's how that you get off the opening script. Yeah, let's get to low number two.
No,
Myles Garrett gets five sacks, and that's a low because the Browns lose by 19. And it's just kind of a, what'd you think you're getting into, Myles, when you signed that contract and knew what the quarterback plan was? Patriots win handily after the first half, I'd say 32-13. Even Mike Vrabel said, yeah, once they got off their gadget plays, we kind of had them. And I was like, yeah. He's right. He's right. Once they got off the Harold Fannin designer touchdown, it was kind of a lot of third downs and a lot of unsuccessful third downs, it felt like, when I watched this game. But what did you think of Myles Garrett and the Browns' loss and the Patriots just kind of controlling that game, Chuck?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, I think this is just another data point that Drake May should probably be the MVP front runner at this point, just comparatively to where this team was last year, where they are now. Right, he's just a machine. Like we were talking last week that this was could be like a fun back and forth, and then Myles had his moments, but outside of it, like Drake May kind of dominated that game outside of maybe like the first drive. So that was awesome to see. And then the other side of the ball, it went exactly as expected. Man, like, dude, NFL football just looks so hard for Dylan Gabriel. Man, it's like you can't see over the line. The passes take forever to get there, and you just can't generate a whole lot of offense. Stefanski said he's going to stay the starter, which is fine. Like, who else are you going to put back there? No one who is on this team right now is going to be considered the starter for the team next year. So they're just simming the season on offense and trying to put Myles Garrett heroics on display on the other side of the ball. But Myles, you know, this is what you signed up for. Look at Micah Parsons. Look what he did. He could play for a Super Bowl this year. He didn't have to do this. I don't know what that plan was, but if you played Red Dead Redemption 2, he got Dutch Vanderland in a pretty serious way. Because I still don't understand the money aspect. Like today shows why the money arguments were stupid. Because how many teams would love to have a player that can get five sacks that easy? Every single team. So he could have gone out on the open market, or essentially what counts as the open market where you're an elite player, and negotiated another deal with like three other teams and have them bid against each other. But he chose the same Cleveland because Andrew Berry sold him on some plan that involves throwing for 2 yards a pass. I don't get it. How did you not see this coming?
I know. He could have been Reggie White going to the Packers back in the day, something like that.
They broke a Reggie White record today. For the most sacks.
I know. 30. Maybe that's why he was on my mind. He had five sacks, eight pressures, three quick pressures. His average get off was 0.7 seconds, which is absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd. And he was getting chipped every single play and getting sacks. And Will Campbell was like, I could see Will Campbell trying different techniques. And it was just, it didn't matter. And like Myles Garrett, I mean, like they're talking about his Euro step because he was just slicing inside. So what you're saying is exactly right. It's like, he just can do this with, I mean, he's got help. I mean, there's some other really good players along this front. Carson Schwechinger had a great pick as well. Ends up with a high ankle sprain, which is very Browns-like as well. But no, it's just like, he can just absolutely take over games. He finishes with five sacks and it just didn't matter. It doesn't matter. And that's just like the same old story. I mean, the Browns finished with 28% success rate today. Dylan Gabriel had 156 yards at 18.9 QBR. Quinshon Judkins, who we both like, 9 carries for 19 yards because their run game can't get going. Their O-line, and this is something I just keep looking at, the ticking time bomb of their O-line because all the contracts coming up soon and they're old. And so just, all right, so next year after this offseason, your defense isn't perfect. It's got a lot of nice parts, you know, but they're still just average against the pass. As Drake May showed today, if Myles Garrett doesn't get sacks or doesn't get pressures, it's just you can shred them. All right, your O-line's going to get reworked. You're probably going to have a new quarterback. Who's the number one receiver? Because Jerry Jeudy ain't it. You know, they got some fun rookies, but it's like, oh, my God. Like, what is this plan for everybody? Myles Garrett's cool, I guess. But like you said, it's like, this is what you signed up for.
Right.
But the Drake May experience is a lot of fun. I will say
it's a lot of fun.
That at least it's a little better test for him, but Drake May experience is a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm still kind of confused why the Browns brought Miles back. Like, I thought they should have, like, thought about trading him just to start jumpstarting this rebuild. They're so far away from being competitive. And yeah, it just kind of sucks to me that one of the best players of this era just on such a crappy team, but he did choose his life.
Yeah. I think what you said, with Gabriel, and even on offense, like Gabriel, it just looks hard. It's just like every throw to the outside looks hard. Every throw over the middle, he's getting somebody killed. And so it's like, even just he has nice moments, it's just like, it looks difficult. I know there's going to be the calls for Shadur, but I can tell you what I saw in the preseason. It's not going to be much better. He's probably going to take even more sacks and everything too. Oh, yeah. Just real before I even kick it on forward. So May right now, first in success rate passing still. Second in scramble rate. I think he has the second most rushing yards. Third most rushing yards among quarterbacks, second most scramble yards, second in EPA per dropback. But it's just another machine like day for him. Like, I thought underneath throws were great. Had some big the sequence where he scrambled and then throw the launch ball to Kayshon Booty, because Booty just catches one of these a week now. I mean, some efficient underneath throws. I thought Josh McDaniels had a sweet opening drive after the second half. I can't believe I'm saying that. But the start of the second half, they had an awesome, like, adjustments are overrated. What adjustments on good teams are is they just chop off the plays that are like, okay, they're doing this front or doing this coverage. Okay, so we won't run this play and this play and this play anymore. So on our game plan, we have these plays. So we're just going to focus on these three plays. After the second half, they're like, okay, let's run away from Myles Garrett. let's do a whole bunch of speed stuff and motion stuff, because that wasn't working what we were doing. And then it was just like a beautiful drive. Trayvon Henderson got some touches, pin pull, speed option. They did a double pass, a jet sweep to Pop Douglas, I think it was. Ends with a boot TD to Hunter Henry. I was like, oh, it's like, it's not perfect. The O-line still is okay or iffy. You know, they have some nice moments, you know, and the pass catchers are actually way improved and actually very solid across the board. But it's a solid offense in New England, and Drake May is just cranking it up. It's just maximizing what they're giving up. So it's a high floor offense that May is pushing way over the top. So it's pretty fun to watch. It's not the craziest designs you've ever seen, but it's just solid stuff. And that's what McDaniels is all about. It's just solid design. And then you got May just performing like he is. So, all right, low number three. And this was one game I kept getting interested in because the spread just didn't make sense. And the other game featured a backup quarterback. Actually, both games featured backup quarterbacks, one pulling off a win, one pulling off a huge, getting upset. Let's start with your team. Dolphins beat the Falcons 34-10, going against a Dolphins team that had the worst defense by DVOA. Bottom in EPA per pass, bottom five in rush stats, but all the numbers that we throw, all the alphabet soup of acronyms that we throw at you guys, bottom. That's the Dolphins defense. They didn't do shit on offense for the Falcons. I know I'm not supposed to swear, but that was a terrible, lethargic performance. And I know Kirk Cousins is the backup now, but still Kirk Cousins, who you signed to a big deal and you're keeping on this team. And then Drake London, I know, is sitting. But they couldn't get the run game going. They couldn't get anything going. Their defense was just getting peppered throughout the day. What were your takeaways from the Falcons laying an egg there, Chuck?
can I tell you when I turned this game off?
Oh, my God.
I turned this game off with 10 minutes left in the second quarter. The Falcons were down 7-3. And it was so over. It was so over. I've seen this game so many times where they just don't have the juice. And it's second down, right? Or first down, they're on their own 4-yard line. First down, Tyler Allgeier, minus 3-yard run. So now they're on the 1-yard line. I'm watching Kirk Cousins sneak out of his own end zone on second down. I was like, no, okay, this is so over. And then they shank the punt, a 14-yard punt on fourth down, and I cut it off. And the only things I saw after that were on red zone. So I saw Bijan Robinson fumble, before I blinked, it was like 31-3. And I was like, I still know this team like the back of my hand. Here's the truth about the Falcons. You can't be the number one defense if you can't stop the run. That's all it is. You can't, because games like this happen where they don't even have to think about it. Like, you don't even have to put two in danger, because you can give Achan the ball or dump it off to Ollie Gordon had a short touch or short catch that he turned into a long touchdown. Just really bad, really bad stuff. And also, like, the times that you do have chances to kind of affect the passer. It's not like they're really doing it all that much recently. Even since the McCarthy game, it's not like they're really getting all that much pressure. So they currently are giving the 11th pick in the draft to the Los Angeles Rams, and I'm curious to see where that will be in a month.
Which was, we knew was a scary decision. Like, even though James Pierce was getting those pressures now, now his warts are showing up because you can just run on them. I mean, they had fewer than 50 plays, which is already like a Falcons team should be living and dying with long drives in their run game going. They couldn't run it. They couldn't throw it. Like, that's the thing. I couldn't get over that. I know Kirk Cousins is going to be limited. I know Drake London's not playing. But this team should just not even, like, think about it and run for 130 yards. You know what I mean? Like, they shouldn't have a game without, like, fewer than 130 rushing yards. Like, they should just be able to walk off the bus and just churn it, because that's the basis of their whole team anyways. So I looked it up, and because I was just kind of, like, keeping – this is more like a bottom quadrant game for me. I was, like, kind of like, all right, is Bijan hurt? Like, did something happen where he got hurt? And I was like, no, it's just they couldn't extend any drives. And the Dolphins, like, speaking of Falcons defense, the Dolphins were just running their greatest hits. It wasn't any new stuff they were doing. They're another team that did more jumbo offensive linemen, but they were just, it was the same stuff. They were running their same RPO plays. The Waddle touchdown was a classic play action that they run. He was wide open on a catch and run. So I don't know. Yeah. It was like, I know your backup, quote unquote, is starting, but this is the guy you signed for big money, and you guys walked out there like you had no shot of winning. And it's like, that's how the Dolphins go in every single week. The Dolphins are having, like, quote battles. Like, their quarterback doesn't even know what to say to the press right now. And the Falcons looked like the team that was more lethargic. It was just, very, very, very stinky, performance for them.
I mean, they got punched in the mouth. They got punched in the mouth today.
Yeah.
Like, in the ground game. Bijan Robinson today, yards before contact, 0.78. Not even 1 yard before contact. Like, this run defense has been steamrolled all season. So I don't know if that was just like this is the Falcons DNA, but like the Bills today, James Cook before contact, 7.95 yards before contact. That's what good 7.9? Teams do.
7.9?
9.5. Eight yards per carry before contact. 80% of his carries went for 5 or more yards. That's what good teams do to bad defenses. This is what the Falcons do to bad defense. They get punched in the mouth. Terrible game.
Yeah. I was like, I know the Dolphins' defense is bad. All right, how bad are they? Yep. I actually, off the top of my head, I had it right. 32nd DVOA, 32nd against the pass, 25th against the run, 26th in success rate, 32nd against the pass, 30th in EPA per play, 32nd in EPA per play against the pass, 26th against the run. So it was like, pick your poison. It's like, do something. Like, it's the meme of the guy with the stick. It's like, do something. That was very, very crappy performance from them. Also the other ag, because I thought this was a curious line, even though I know that the one team, the Ravens, have been banged up and they're getting healthier, but then Lamar Jackson's out, even though there's a lot of rumors that he was going to play, and I know he practiced, but it was with the scout team, it seemed like. But the Ravens beat the Bears 30-16, and it seemed like the Bears, who had some nice drives when I was paying attention, just couldn't get out of their own ways, Caleb had the bad interception when he was backed up. I want to see the end zone view of it, but, you know, it felt like he threw it late, at least in my kind of viewing, you know, of the pick. But just the Bears, again, just could not stop this Ravens offense with Scoop Huntley playing. You know, Derrick Henry had like a good solid game, but not like a crazy, crazy game, but they just couldn't like really get off the field, but they lose 30-16. What were your takeaways from this game? Cause that would just felt like that felt like, I know Kyler Gordon was hurt. Bears had more injuries and stuff like that, but it's like, it just felt like they were, again, a performance that was inconsistent and kind of different from how they've been playing the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that was just bad. Especially in this circumstance, I guess the supreme overlords who make these lines, they really know best, because I found that pretty confusing. And even up until the game time, like before kickoff, the Ravens were still favored by 2.5. And just to be fair to myself, like, it's been a while since Tyler Huntley has played a good game. You know, it's been on several teams.
I think you're fair. Right? And having some apprehension there.
Basically, since he fumbled the ball in that playoff game against the Bengals, it's been tough sledding for him. But he was great today. You know, did a lot better than Cooper Rush did in their last game. Did a lot to keep them on schedule, to just kind of keep them moving forward, and did some nice things with his legs outside the pocket and made some nice throws on second chance plays, which is, hey, that's kind of ideally what you would want your Lamar Jackson backup to look like and how you want to perform. So that was a really strong game for him and for someone who's kind of bounced around over the past few years. I think home is Baltimore. Like, they should both just like, hey, as long as Lamar's here, you should be the backup. It didn't work for you with other places. It wasn't working for us with other quarterbacks. Let's just stay together here. But as far as the Bears go, I struggle on how to feel with this, because I know people are saying the Ravens are healthier on defense, but even at the start of the season, they weren't a good, healthy defense. Correct. So I don't know why that matters all that much. And the Bears, they were just really inconsistent. I thought it was a real up and down game from Caleb. I don't think it was his best performance. I certainly don't think it was as bad as people were making it out to be, again, as if he had some horrible game. I thought he gave him a nice chance in the second half to try and have a run on some drives, but overall just wasn't enough. And I think this is probably just part of like the growing pains of where you are, where you're trying to figure out what this offense is going to look like for the long term. You know, you might have games where it doesn't work out against one of the worst defenses in the league, but still, I think I do think it's kind of concerning when you look at where the Ravens' run defense has been, especially this season. Like, you couldn't really take advantage of that. That's a little concerning, because that should have been automatic. One of the reasons why we were so concerned about this line or surprised about this line is they gave up 44 points to the Texans before the drive, before the bye. That doesn't seem like a good defense to me, but today they played well and they had easily their best game of the season. And it does make me think like, oh, you know, are they doing the thing again where they get off slow and then they hit the bye and they figure out some things and maybe it's moving forward, or was this just a bad game for the Bears? I honestly left this game with more questions than I had answers as far as like the Bears offense and the Ravens defense goes.
This might be the first game I like rewatch on all 22, because I'm just like, what happened here? Like, the game just, I don't know, nothing felt like, I know my like kind of takeaways are like you say, more questions, because that's actually kind of how I feel even without kind of like talking with you about it. It's like, I don't know, I watched and I saw the Bears ripping off some explosive plays, but then I watched some drives where they looked like crap. And then I still saw some penalties and short yardage stuff. Like, it just looked like the more Bears pre-buy, which isn't to say, like, I think also some people got to chill with the Caleb stuff too. And I know I'm a Caleb optimist, I guess you could put it, where it's like, it's not like a bad performance. It's just more like average. That's a fine floor. Like, it's more the run game. They went 7 for 21 rushing success rate against one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. And the Bears run game has improved. This should have been, I thought the good times were going to keep going, but really just after the first kind of drive, it felt like they kind of lost their way, or maybe some of the opening drives, I would say. They had some zone runs going and stuff, but it felt like they just couldn't get over the, keep that going. And then I thought the passing game, I mean, they had 11 explosive plays today. I know that's not the end all be all, and some of those are when they're catching up, but I mean, they're still like a solid offense. So that's where people are saying, you know, the classic, we need to have a conversation about Caleb Williams. Like, no, we don't. No, we don't. We do not need to have a conversation about Caleb Williams. He's been playing well, and like, the floor is so much higher, and I think they're asking him to do harder things. It's just a little inconsistencies, because I think there's still so much good. I mean, his connection with Roman Dunze is good. They're doing under center play action stuff that's like the harder stuff to get to, and you can see him get more comfortable with it. So, yeah, it's not perfect, but I don't know. I think there's more questions about this defense and the run game than anything with Caleb in the pass game, at least to me. I don't know if you feel any different, but that's just how I feel about it. I'm like, I don't know. I think this is improvement considering what the hell this offense was last year.
Yeah, see, like, this is the offensive output that I thought the Ravens would have if Lamar played, just because their defense hasn't been good. It struggled a lot this year. So,
yeah.
I'm not really too surprised, I guess, like, once it got going. The last thing I have on the Bears offense is there's an interesting split that they had today. Like you said, they did have 11 explosive plays, about 18% explosive play rate, but also 34% of their plays went for 0 or fewer yards. So, you know, maybe a little boomer bust there. You know,
that kind of summed up the game.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. I mean, freaking Ravens, they had a 54 passing success rate. Like, I mean, 54%. Yeah. Like, I mean, over 50% to Snoop. You having a laugh? Like, we're having questions about Caleb Williams? I know where the issues are with this team. Come on. But no, I'm encouraged that at least the Ravens win this game, because it's just like, all right, I want to see Lamar come back healthy and maybe make a roll. Just make this interesting. So maybe, again, I want to review it. I'm not still super high on the Ravens defense. But, I mean, at least it's improvement from the worst that maybe in the league that we've seen, maybe outside the Dolphins. Apparently, these teams now put up these performances. That's how it goes in the NFL. Before we wrap it up, I want to give a little extra credit. Jonathan Taylor's Offensive Player of the Year campaign keeps rolling. Holy crap, the Colts, man. It's just every week. I know the Titans are whatever. Titans are awful. But it's like, this is what good offenses do. There's no blemishes. Jonathan Taylor, 12 carries. 153 rushing yards. The one touchdown where he out the angle, he just there's no angles the safeties can take now. They like they keep going for these angles and he just obliterates them. They don't even touch him. It's unbelievable what this offense do. Riley Leonard was getting snaps by the end of this game. That's how good the Colts are playing right now. Alec Pierce is dunking on guys every week, but I wanted to give extra credit. Also, Cam Ward, I know the Titans are an abomination right now. Cam Ward had some baller throws in this game. I know it wasn't perfect. Some of them got dropped, but he actually did. So I just want to give him a shout out a little bit too. But anything to add here, Chuck? Because I just, the Colts, man. The Colts are just week in, week out. Just keep doing this.
There was a funny moment today, I thought, with the announcers where Jonathan Taylor, he had a touchdown that looked like it was, it was one of like those jet like passes real quick where they flip it in front of them for a touchdown. Yeah. And first of all, it was counted as a rushing touchdown first, that chance to receive a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And the announcer was like, oh man, you know, Jonathan Taylor had this chance to break a record where he could have been the first player with three rushing touchdowns. I was like, oh, against the Titans. Oh, in three straight games. Oh, across different seasons. Like, okay, now I don't feel bad for him anymore. Like, there's too many stipulations onto this stat that you're telling me. So I don't care anymore. Just move on to the next play. But he really got stuck on like this super specific touchdown stat against the Titans in consecutive games overseas. I was like, all right, man. Yeah, I don't feel bad for him anymore.
When there's a full moon. And there's a meteor shower. He scores three times. Speaking of announcers, do you think Jonathan Vilma got some inside information about Spencer Rattler getting benched today? If he had any turnovers or what? State
sponsored media.
Laid it on pretty thick there, Jonathan. Oh my God. He said it after the fumble happened. He was like, yeah, you got to bench him after this. And I was like, whoa. And then Rattler got benched a couple drives later. I was like, ah, got it.
Yep.
Got it.
So, yeah.
Got a little something in the production meeting, didn't you?
And he'll do that. You know, Vilma's been, he's been so bad to the Falcons whenever he had broadcast those games. I see right through you, Jonathan. I see right through you.
That is rough. See, that's the thing is I'll watch some crappy games and there was a lot of slop today. So usually, you know, which announcers get those games and it's like, and it's Ron Torbert usually is the one that's the official in those games. And Jonathan Vilma is the one announcing those games. And we got that double special today. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a long game. And it was for the Saints. And really just that entire, that one was not even fun to talk about. It's like, yeah, Bucks win.
It's awful.
Saints were there, I guess. But apparently Rattler is getting benched for Tyler Shuck. And it wasn't like Shuck really burned the house down at all. But yeah, we're closing it out today. That was fun, Chuck. I'll be back Tuesday with Matt. More takeaways from week 8, which should be a great time. Thank you all for joining us on the live show here on YouTube. We do this every single Sunday. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That is Charles McDonald. You can find him at 4Verts on social media. We got a mock draft coming later this week, so be on the lookout for that. Mock draft 2.0, Chuck. Yeah, we're cooking on that. It's Halloween season. That's right. Mock drafts. I got a big board coming up. Oh, boy. Oh, baby. But yeah, be on the lookout for that on Yahoo. Subscribe to us here at Football 301. Follow us. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a review, please. Really, really appreciate that wherever you get your podcasts. Watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports channel where you can check out these live shows. Plus, plenty of other great content. Thanks to Stone, Austin, Madison behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for joining us here. See you guys next time.